Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memory, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello, everyone, and good afternoon. This is your host, John Anderson, and we are here with NASCA.org, and this is scan number 2851. Scan, Stop Child Abuse Now. Tonight, we have a very special guest with us. It's Mary Beth Halsworth from Gettysburg, South Dakota, and she's an activist, and it was stunned to learn about her two children were being abused by an uncle at the ages of 8 and 5. Yeah. So before I get into that story, I'm going to go ahead and tell you a little bit about NASCA and tell you what we do here at NASCA. NASCA is the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. We really emphasize on child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with two goals. And the first goal is educating the public. To me, it is very, very important. I mean, one of the most important aspects about this entire association and what we provide, and it's especially related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sex abuse, CSA. You know, presenting facts showing children abuse to be a pandemic, a worldwide problem that affects everyone. And the second goal is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So before we get to our guests, I do want to let you know, too, that we do have a dedicated call-in number here. If you would like to call into the show, you can remain anonymous if you'd like. It's area code 646-595-2118, and if you'd like to speak with Mary Beth later on during the show and maybe leave a comment with her or ask a question, you can just go ahead and call right on in. So, too, you know, we also offer in Spanish, and we have Fighting for Kids, serving adult survivors, Be Aware, Be a Voice, and Be a Hero. And we also need volunteers here. All the time, NASCA needs volunteers. So if you'd like to be a volunteer, just come on into the website, and that's at NASCA.org, and it should come right up. So, again, I want to thank everybody for tuning into tonight's show. Our guest tonight is Mary Beth Halsworth from Gettysburg, South Dakota, and she's an activist who's stunned to learn her two children were abused by an uncle at ages 8 and 5. And she stated, "I started researching and was blown away by how many children are sexually abused and how few ever receive justice." And she says, I have to give the credit to my sons, however. It's their courage and their desire to not have another child experience this and that keeps me going. And I can definitely relate with that, Mary Beth. I mean, that's definitely something that we live our lives with every day. And Mary Beth and her family live in a remote area where counselors and other experts are few and far between. And because of this challenge, she says that I have worked hard to learn as much as possible what my kids might feel and how best to help them, best counseling methods, coping methods, and keep strong relationships with my sons. And how important is that? We all know that's to me probably one of the most important things about having a relationship with your children. And she goes on, 3 years ago, through several connections, I joined force with several senators and professionals and survivors, and we drafted Jolene's Law. And we'll go into Jolene's Law a little bit here in a few minutes. So our law was passed unanimously and signed into effect, establishing a task force to study how our state, and that's South Dakota, is handling CSA, child sex abuse. But she's hardly done, as similar legislation was brought to other states, and California is set to bring forward its next session. In addition to that, I organize local public awareness events and team up with law enforcement and domestic violence shelters to hold training. So she concludes that I want to offer for others that there are more good days than bad days now. But as well as we know, this will continue to affect them the rest of their lives. So I do want to thank you so much for calling in, Mary Beth, and I'm going to go ahead and unmute your mic here. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Mary Beth. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for being here tonight. What a pleasure to have you on the show tonight. It really is. Man, we have so much to talk about tonight. With all of the things that you've been through, with going to get the Jolene's Law, and then you got future aspects coming up with California and all kind of good things going on, man. That's real impressive. It really is. So, before we talk about, some things, is there anything else that you can share with us? I mean, like what are some of your hobbies? What kind of person are you that you can maybe describe to everyone, that you do in your pastime also, so we can get a good idea about what you do?
Sure. I guess in my pastime, I don't get much of it, but but I own a coffee roasting business, so I really enjoy roasting coffee. And I'm an avid backpacker. I love being out usually with my dog and just backpacking any mountains I can get in. And my kids and I go camping together and fishing and hunting and yeah, if I can be outside, I'm the happiest I can be. So,
that is beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. I love that too. I'm the same way. And you brought up the dog. Again, I have a King Shepherd. That I take with me, and I go and collect driftwood. So that's my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to be. And I'm always hiking. Yeah. So being outdoors just. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can agree with this, that it offers a lot of peace and tranquility, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It really does keep me sane.
So I do want to get into your story here and maybe kind of find out, in the beginning how things happen. I know that they were very young. My God, 8 and 5. How old are they now?
Now they are 20 and 17.
Okay. So that's quite a few years are going by, between then and now. And, tell us what it was like in the early days for you, where you were and how life, became with having your two sons and then maybe, getting into what happened.
Yeah, back then I was still married and my kids and I lived out on a ranch with my husband at the time. And, you know, life was pretty good. We just, you know, raised livestock, put up hay, and that was it. And this life has very much changed since then. That is not at all what our life is like now. But at the time, you know, it was just pretty simple. And yeah, we were working in a shop one night, and my five-year-old is the one that kind of looked at me first, and he's like, "Mom, Uncle shared his germs with me." And I didn't know what that meant, but it didn't sound good.
Right.
So I asked him to repeat it. I was like, what did you say, buddy? And he said the same phrase, and there were some people in the shop with us, and so I felt like I kind of wanted to be alone with him, you know, see what was going on. So took him in the office and asked him again what he said, and then asked him what that meant, and he began to describe what happened. And within a matter of 10 minutes, our entire world turned upside down. So.
Oh my Lord. Oh my God. I'm so sorry. I can only imagine, you know, what you were possibly thinking at the time, you know, because that's very similar to my situation. And my mom, I can only imagine, you know, what she was thinking about at that time. So what was your first reaction to do? I mean, how did you handle it?
Well, the only mistake I made, you know, looking back, was I was just kind of blown away because I was a single mom, or not a single mom, I was a stay-at-home mom. So there wasn't a whole lot of times that he was alone with this person. So my first reaction, and I know now, don't ask for specifics, but I said, "When?" Because I just couldn't wrap my head around it. Like, so this was June 10th, and he said, "Well, when you and Cody," that would be my husband at the time, "when you and Cody went out to supper for your birthday." So June 10th, my birthday was June 8th. So it had been 2 days before.
Right.
And that made sense because that was one of the very few times that we actually took the kids over to stay with them. And, you know, my husband had wanted to take me out to supper. And so I just, you know, I gave him a huge hug and I said, "I love you so much. I'm very proud of you. Thank you for telling me this never should have happened, but I'm going to see what we can do," you know. And he wasn't upset. You know, he was a typical five-year-old. Like, he wasn't crying or anything. It just, he knew something wasn't right, and that was it, you know. And he was fine. And so I sent him back into the shop. And then I knew I had to ask my oldest son because he had been there too. And so I called him in by himself, you know, and I said, "Hey, buddy, did anything happen at your aunt and uncle's the other day?" And he just started bawling. And I was like, "Oh,
no,
here we go again."
You knew it right then.
So, So, you know, he didn't share as much. Their personalities are very different. And so, like my second son is very much outgoing. My first son is a little bit more like introverted. And so he didn't share as much initially. But, you know, I just did the same thing, gave him a huge hug. You know, "I'm here for you. You can talk to me about anything. I love you. This never should have happened. I believe you. You know, we're going to talk to someone and get this figured out." So yeah, it was it was like I was hit in the stomach with a 2x4.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry. I really am. You know, I mean, I can only imagine what you were thinking about. You know, so what happened after that? I mean, did you call the police or anything, or confront them directly, or?
No, I grew up with law enforcement in my family, so I knew right away I had to call our local police chief. And because of my personality and because of my familiarity with law enforcement, I always kind of become friends with local law enforcement. I want them to know that I support them and whatever. So
absolutely.
I right away when I got my oldest calmed down and, you know, he was fine and stuff, I called the police chief at the time and I said, "Hey, this is what happened. You know, what do we need to do?" And so they said, "Okay, you need to bring the kiddos in, to the station. I will be there in plain clothes. So, you know, I mean, my kids knew them, so it probably wouldn't have freaked them out. But, you know, they said, we'll be in plain clothes and, you know, we're just going to do an interview and just ask them to tell their story. And then we'll proceed from there. I'm like, okay. So I called the boys back in. I said, hey, you guys know Officer so-and-so. I said, you know, we're going to go in and you guys are going to tell your story. Just let them know what happened because we want to make sure that you're safe. And, you know, my oldest son, you know, a little timid, he was like, okay, I guess. And then my second son was like, okay, let's go. You know? And so we went in and they gave me permission to sit next to them. They just told me, you know, you can't say anything. You can't touch the kiddo. Like, just sit there. You can be there for support, but you can't, like, do anything because we're going to record this and we want to make sure that they, you know, that the recording shows that you didn't, like, prompt them. And so, yeah, sat there when my kids told their story again. And we found out later that night that they went and confronted the uncle, and he admitted to it, which never happens.
And, did he really?
Yeah, he did. And so the police actually went with him to tell his family and my in-laws, and then they arrested him and took him to jail. So that started a very long, crazy process after that.
So do the boys still remember being there that day?
Yeah, they do.
Do they really? Oh, wow.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they must do they ever bring that up often in their life or you know, because the only reason I ask that is your story is so similar to mine. It just blows my mind. It really does, because I also have two sons. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why I'm saying I'm reading your bio and I'm like, wow, this is almost, you know, a lot of so much in common here is that, you know, there were certain things that I remember, you know, growing up, and whenever we had, I would say, difficulties, you know, with dealing with this situation, I always remembered certain things, you know, and being at the courthouse was one of those things, you know, that I remembered. So that's why I asked that question, for my own, you know, reason and other people's, to know that, you know, there are certain things that really stand out, you know, through this whole process in your life, you know, and that keeps coming up, you know. So this started you to become an activist?
Yes. So a couple of days after the disclosure, my second son ended up disclosing even more, which we now know is piecemeal disclosure. They disclose a little bit, kind of gauge your reaction, and then they end up telling you everything when they know that you're a safe person to tell. So he ended up telling more of what happened. We went to the Child Advocacy Center, which is 4 hours away, one way, and we did everything there. And then eventually, you know, the case was heard in front of a grand jury, and the person was sentenced to penitentiary. But after, because there was media coverage and everything, because this was a small town, that's when I got a phone call from a lady who lives about 3.5 hours away. And she called and said, I got your name and your number from someone. I read about your case. I just don't understand how you got justice. And I was on the phone with her and I'm like, what do you mean? This happens more often? Like, I didn't say that, but I was thinking it. And I just, and so she told me her story of her daughter who was molested by the little girl's father. And I was just kind of blown away. So I got off the phone with her and I immediately jumped on my computer and I was like, what? And I typed in, what is the prevalence of child sexual assault? And I looked at the numbers and I was just, I mean, it was like you placed a ton of bricks on me. And I was like, why isn't anyone talking about this? Why isn't, I mean, I was naive. I mean, I was in my early 20s at this point, and I thought it was just always the creepy dude down the street. Like, and I'm looking at these numbers and how many of these cases are loved ones of the children, whether family or friends, and I'm just like, this is nuts. Why isn't anyone talking about this? And So I went to my my 5-year-old and 8-year-old, and I was like, you guys, like, this, you guys aren't the only one this happens to. Like, this happens all the time. And my 5-year-old is like, well, Mom, you have to do something. You have to make it stop. And that just started it all. Because I could not look at him and say there's nothing I can do.
So you mean to tell me they came to you about that and asked you to do something about it? That is huge.
Yeah. Yep.
That really is huge. You know, it just goes to show me, you know, the integrity of these two, you know, young men, how strong and willed they are to actually encourage their mom to come out and do this. I mean, do they support you? And I know they probably do, but how much do they support you in your life even today about this?
100%. Like, I almost every time, and not as much anymore because they're kind of at the point where, like, whatever, Mom, if you want to talk about it and keep doing your thing, like, go for it. We're behind you. But, like, for the first probably 5-6 years, anytime I would get asked to tell their story or be involved in something, I'd always go up to them and be like, mm-hmm. this is what's happening. This is who I'm talking to. This is potentially who would hear it. Are you okay with this?
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
every single time they were like, absolutely.
Wow.
My second mm-hmm. son has even, last night he was in the car with me and we were delivering coffee, and he said, you know, I kind of think I want to do, like, inspirational speaking and motivational speaking. He's like, I have no problem telling our story. I really think I want to do this. And I was like, son, mm-hmm. I 100% support you. You know, they have seen so many lives changed and the impact of their stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I tell people, it's my kids' courage. It's their story. I'm just mm-hmm. the megaphone that won't stop talking. You know, so
how beautiful is that? I mean, you don't hear these stories too often. You know, not this outcome. You know, I have to say that I'm very touched by what y'all are doing. I really am. I mean, it's just amazing that they're there for you at that caliber, at that level, you know. So I want to back up a little bit, if you don't mind, going back
Absolutely.
To the kids. I wanted to ask you, you know, how was your journey of getting therapy and things for them, or did they need any? Because I did see where you said that, you know, you were so far away, from being around any doctors so much. I mean, you had to travel forever to get there, and that would be multiple appointments, considering it was both, maybe. I mean, how did you handle that, or what happened?
Yeah, that was a huge difficulty. And my boys, they told me that they wanted to speak to a male counselor, and male counselors are even more rare in South Dakota. And so that was difficult. And then, of course, we had to find someone that accepted our insurance. Then we had to find someone that had experience with trauma, and especially, like, trauma play therapy. That was almost impossible. I probably called upwards of 100 phone numbers. I'm not saying counselors, but phone
mm-hmm.
numbers trying
right.
to find someone. And some of the people that I talked to, I would not take my children to them if they're the last person on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we even went to one location, one supposed child therapist, and she wanted to take them into a playroom. Like, we were in this office part, and she's like, okay, I'm going to take each of the boys into the playroom, and we're going to do therapy. And I said, well, can I see the playroom first? And she said, no, I don't allow parents to do that. And I said, well, you are not taking my child into a room that I have not already
exactly.
looked at. And I don't feel comfortable with, like, that. It just, to me, was such a breach already of a very vulnerable feeling family. And I mean, she came highly recommended, but I said, absolutely not. Like, you are not taking my child to a place that I have not first looked at. Not happening. So it took us a long time. And I finally found a place, Christian Life Ministries out of Rapid City. And
mm-hmm.
they were probably 6 and 9 by the time we found this therapy place. And he wasn't necessarily a play therapist, but he knew that kids aren't just going to sit and do talk therapy. And so he would take my boys on a walk around the block, or they'd go out and play football, or he had like a sword collection, and he would like show them the sword collection. And, you know, he found ways to engage with them while they healed. Between that and then the research that I did on my own, I was basically their therapist for all those gaps. So they didn't even go to therapy like constantly. It was like we would go down there every other week. Since it was such a drive, that was 4 or 3.5 hours away for us, they would allow they'd block out 3 hours or 2.5, 3 hours. And each boy got about an hour of that one-on-one time, and then the counselor would meet with my husband and I, because I said, I'm not just bringing my kids for you to fix. Like, you are going to teach me methods that I need to learn to help them continue to thrive. And so they were really fantastic and just really accommodated for us.
Wow. That's very impressive. It really is. I mean, I can only imagine what you had to encounter, you know, almost every day, considering how many, you know, people are out there where, like you said, phone numbers. And I can definitely understand that, because, you know, you may dial, you know, 10 or 12 phone numbers before you can get one person, you know, that was even willing to speak to you, you know. And so, you know, things of that nature. But, man, and that's another thing. That's the reason I asked you that, is because I'm so much with you on that. Is that I think also – you know, education with your, you know, teaching yourself the best you can is a huge, huge platform, you know, for relationships and your own family, you know. And I can see that yours, definitely, you know. And I'm really happy that you chose to go that route. I feel that being open, authentic, and honest, and having that empathy is the biggest key to, you know, of having that type of therapy is better than going to any doctor in the world, because they don't offer those kind of things. And you're talking about him, you know, finding common ground. That is the biggest key in life to me. You know, you have to find common ground, because everybody is different. Everybody has a different personality, you know, so you have to really absorb that and don't treat everybody the same, you know. So I know that you had, you know, educated yourself in a lot of different ways. What were some of the ways that you did that, you know, to learn about all these coping methods and, you know, just the counseling methods and things of that nature?
I can't even tell you how many books I read on child psychology and healing after trauma and, you know, pediatric therapy. And between books and the internet, I really honestly became obsessed. I mean, every single day I was devoting, you know, several hours of just reading and trying to understand all the different methods that that would probably benefit my kids. But then also, not only that, but in my mind, it's like, sure, I can take my kids to counseling every week or every other week for a few hours, but I am the person around them 24/7.
Yeah.
So it's not enough for me to just depend on someone to help them. Like, I need to be able to know these things too. So I had known a little bit of how it would affect their self-esteem and their moods and things like that based on an experience from my past when I was in high school. But it was different enough that I knew I needed to know more. So I literally read research articles and, you know, techniques and different, I mean, I sent emails to tons of counselors that would just email me back with ideas. And, you know, if I could find anyone that was willing to teach me something, I would ask them. But I also wanted to understand what makes a person, you know, prey on children. And so I also did a lot of research on that end of it too, because it was so mind-boggling to me that I wanted to understand literally everything about it. So yeah, I really became obsessed with it.
I can understand that so much. You know, people ask me the same thing. You know, how could you go into you know, wanting to know about, you know, what happened. What are they like? Why did they choose to prey on kids? And I'm like, you know, when you're at a certain level with this, you have to understand it from both sides. You try to understand mm-hmm. it from both sides. And in no mm-hmm. cases, educate yourself on them. Because, you know, like your case, you know, you have two sons, two young sons, you know. What if there was a case where there was multiple children at a facility, you know? What happened with that? You know, there's so many different levels. Not that any other case is worse than any, you know, not at all. In fact, you know, there's some cases that I'm just so mind-boggled about that I don't even think the education out of one case could even come out all the way, you know, because of what happened.
Right.
It's disgusting, you know. There are no mm-hmm. words to feel the way it happened. So, you know, but the way that you did yours, I'm really impressed by that, and I will always agree with the way you did this. And it took me many, many years, Mary Beth, to understand that myself. You know, I'm a 45-year survivor, okay? And mm-hmm. and I'll just tell you real quick what happened to me was that I actually took my abuser to court. He was acquitted by a Catholic high-end judge who did a bench trial instead of a jury trial, right? He was acquitted, mm-hmm. So he wound up raping 26 kids after me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
26. And we had them, you know? That's the thing. So, you know, that's why I chose to do this the rest of my life also, to make sure, like you say, and this is my biggest thing, this is why I wanted to go back to this, because even with your sons noticing this about, I don't ever want to see another child, you know, go through what we went through, you know, and that's
mm-hmm.
that's just huge. That is so huge in life, you know. So,
yeah.
So getting back
well,
on the boys, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I'm so sorry that you went through that, and you know, it's just that's more. I mean, that's a perfect example of why I decided to see what I could do, because it's just. Unacceptable how many of these cases don't lead to justice, you know, and that just
mm-hmm.
puts the perpetrator right back on the streets, you know, and it's absolutely
right.
frustrating and unacceptable.
Yeah. You know, that's what this is all about. There's too many cases that go and fall through the cracks, you know, and there's too many pedophiles that walk, and I do not want that to happen ever again. So, I know that you know, all of this you know, education that you were doing on your own, you know, really, you know, it was just a huge challenge for you. But it looks like that you overcame a lot of things here, and then you decided that you were going to with a lot of connections, I would guess, that you joined forces with several senators and stuff to go into the Jolene's Law. So how did that come about?
Well, when I started doing research, I initially found out that one of the biggest reasons why so many of these cases don't move forward is because of the Crawford versus Washington that states
mm-hmm.
that a person has the right to be faced by, you know, the accuser. The accused has the right to be faced by the accuser in the court. Well, like with the case of that lady who calls me, her little girl was 3 years old. And there was no way that little girl is going to be able to face her dad in a court and say exactly what he did to her. I mean, it's just impossible. And
right.
So the more I researched, and I came up with Endeavor 52 because my faith is very important to me. And
mm-hmm.
I knew the walls of Jerusalem were rebuilt in 52 days. And I said, well, I want to build figurative walls of protection around children. So I'm going to pray and
mm-hmm.
research every 52 days and see what happens. So the more I began to understand of how many issues there were, the more I decided I'm just going to figure out what I need to do about it and what needs to be changed in our state.
Uh-huh.
Eventually that led me to
mm-hmm.
our local senator. He led me to a whole bunch of other people. And then, yeah, we just kind of all came together and said, this needs to happen. We need to be fixing this. So we wrote Jolene's Law.
Mm-hmm. So how did you come up with the name Jolene?
So Jolene is named after an amazing woman from here in South Dakota. Her name is Jolene Letcher.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we decided she's a survivor. And we decided, you know, we needed a face for our law to represent all survivors. And we chose her. She's just an amazing powerhouse of a woman. And she was on that initial task force. She's been with us the whole time throughout the task force and the advisory board and everything. And we just decided that we were going to bring this law forward and try to get it passed so we could start a research project to find out what South Dakota was doing right and what we needed to improve for prevention and response in South Dakota.
Right. So, you know, going through in all of this, between dealing with, you know, the legislature, the House, the state, and everything, how long did this take y'all, basically, since you started on it, to getting this actually passed?
The very first time it went forward in both the committee in the House and the Senate, it was passed unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we brought it forward in like January, and by May it was enacted into law. That summer, the task force began and the research began to figure out. So it was a very quick, you know, turnaround, and we continued that task force for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome. That is totally awesome. So basically, y'all meet. Do y'all have, you know, meetings like so every so often and get together and talk about it and then just pursue whatever you want to go after, huh? Is that how y'all kind of operate?
Yeah. Every summer, every month in the summertime, we'd get together. We discuss, you know, and everyone, there's like subcommittees. Everyone had a lot of work to do. And we'd figure out, you know, what needs to happen. After 3 years, we weren't done with our work. And so we created the Center for Prevention of Child Maltreatment, and all of us task force members and then people we also added since then, since the beginning, we all became the advisory board members, and we are still in operation. We're about, my goodness, 3 years, 4 years into our 10-year plan. And it's just amazing. Like, we have grown. We've added employees to the center. The things that we've done around the state are just incredible.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great. That is great. So, you know, moving on, I know that you're definitely interested in getting involved, you know, with other states and other things like that. So what are your goals? You know, how long do you plan on doing this, and where are you going from here with that?
Well, my dream would be to have similar legislation everywhere. I feel that there's a lot of states that really need to improve their prevention and response efforts.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest challenge for me has been finding people who are at the point in their healing to
mm-hmm.
move forward with that mission, because it's not easy. And
right.
So I always put that out there. If you're interested in getting this, you know, in your state, I'm definitely here to help you, to kind of help you walk through that process,
mm-hmm.
To give you information on what we've already done. But I'm also here as support for survivors and non-offending family members. So, I mean, social media presence is huge with that. I still am doing adverse childhood experiences trainings. I'm one of the master trainers. I'm also an enough abuse prevention master trainer. So I'm still doing those things. You know, and I'm still taking every opportunity I can to spread my kids' inspiring story of just courage and healing. Because I want people to understand that they're not alone and that you can still have an amazing life after experiencing this. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Right now,
you said that
those
so
are the
perfect.
Things
go ahead.
On.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say right now, those are the biggest things I'm focusing on.
Uh-huh. That is so perfect. I love that so much. And that's exactly what I wanted to talk about next, if it's okay with you, is that I can tell you right now that there are some special people listening right now, Larry, okay, that I know for a fact are going to want to really listen to what we're about to talk about. And this is about that healing process, okay, about what it takes, different ways of adjusting in your life and knowing, that there are people out here that can help you, and that there is a better life, out there waiting on you, just like your boys, I mean, you have been by their side every step of the way, and you've seen them grow and adjust and if you have, some advice for someone that, is out there. And I will say this, specifically, you have two boys. You know that males and females do seem to tender to have, some different ways of healing. But in the general form, there are a lot of quite similarities, So I know you've read up a lot about on that. Why don't you, kind of give us, some really good inside, information on the ways that people can help heal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the steps. And the steps too, Like, what does it take when before you've even come out, and disclosed?
I know from, while I do not have that direct survivor experience as a child, like I said, I did experience something as a teenager in high school, but even through the process that I've seen through my boys and then now working with the incarcerated women at the women's prison and a majority of them being victims and survivors, I mean, I always encourage people to never give up trying to get someone to listen. And it's so important. And unfortunately, not everyone's going to be strong enough to handle hearing it, but don't give up. Just keep trying to find that one person who's willing to listen. But I know from a parent's perspective, like, just handling a disclosure as calmly as possible is so crucial.
Yeah.
Telling your kiddo that you believe in them and you love them. And I know that's hard because the person who did it is probably someone that you care about as well, but you absolutely have to choose your kiddo. You have to. And if there's a mom or dad listening and they didn't at first, but they just feel like, I really need to go back and talk to my kid right now. Even if they're an adult, go back and talk to them and tell them you believe them and you're sorry and you're there for them. I feel like what helped my boys so much was, first of all, just me believing them. The second thing was just always telling them, I'm here to talk to you no matter what it is, no matter if you think I'm going to be upset or uncomfortable or anything, I want you to talk to me, like, no big deal, And I wouldn't come at them all serious when I would say it. I would just, be like, hey, how you doing today? If you need to talk to me, I'm right here for you. It doesn't matter what it is. And they did.
Well, that's a good point.
That's
a good point right there, is that you don't want to really be forceful on the situation a lot, do you? Because, if you try to make somebody do something when you're trying to get information out of them or talk, that is not the way to do that. I mean, let's really be upfront with that, because there's a lot of people out here that just don't understand that, having empathy, more than being direct, a lot of times in a harsh way, needs to, be there for them. I mean, I know you've seen that firsthand,
Yeah, absolutely. I always made sure my kids had opportunities to paint or color or draw, whatever they needed to. If that was how they got their emotions out. If I knew that they were having a really stressful day, like I said, I went through and I researched all these things, but if there was a day that they needed to go hammer some nails into a piece of wood, that was great. Mm-hmm. there was things that I had to look out for that, like self-harm was a really concerning thing with one of my boys.
Right.
So like at one point we actually took doors off of the kids' bedrooms just so they weren't able to hide or hurt themselves. You know, I had to change the way that I talked to them because everything I said was like being shouted through a megaphone, even if I was like whispering it, because their sense of self-esteem was so much lower. Even though this wasn't their fault, it really did affect.
Right.
So if I still had to enforce discipline, but if I said something to correct them, I had to change the way I said it. So it was more positive and encouraging instead of negative. It just was so much. But the other big part of it too, and I know this isn't always a common belief, and I'm definitely not saying everyone has to do it. I'm just saying this is what helped us, is I really talked to the boys a lot about how troubled their uncle was. You know, there was some nights that they would be really afraid, even though they knew he was in prison.
Right.
And I really walked the boys through the process of forgiving him, not because he deserved it, but because they did. And even from a very young age, I tried explaining to them, you know, this doesn't mean what he did is okay. It never should have happened. He's in prison because it was a wrong thing to do to you. But I want you to let go of that pain, because we can't carry it. And the more we carry it, the more it affects us. And I know that that's not a very popular belief, but it's truly what helped our family heal.
No, but I do want to ask you too. I do want to ask you about that. If you don't want to talk about it, you feel uncomfortable about it, you don't have to. But I wanted to ask you about that relationship with him, with you.
With my ex-brother-in-law?
What were y'all like before, you know, and when it happened and after?
I didn't know him real well. My husband and I had moved. So this was my husband at the time, his sister and her husband. So we had actually moved them from Indianapolis out to South Dakota a couple years before this happened. We weren't close by any means, but he was definitely a little off. Like, he just did not have the social skills that you would expect someone of his age to have. So we definitely weren't very close. I never dreamed that he would hurt a child.
Right.
But I didn't really necessarily have a problem with him. We just didn't, like, have a lot in common.
Right.
So we never really talked. Like, I was friendly to him if we were over there or at family functions. But, you know, I never, ever dreamed that it would progress to this situation.
But there was that trust there, though, that family trust was there, you know, being who he was at the time, right?
Right, because not only that, but my sister-in-law at the time, she actually had a daycare. And so it was just, you know, you just figured that they were trustworthy people to be around children since she had a daycare with children. So,
Wow. That's just like insult to injury right there. Thinking, you know, they have a daycare, they actually have that professional business where, you know, people depend on them to watch their children every day. You'd think that they would have that nature of number one thing, you know, do not, you know, touch a child, you know, and there it is. It happens right there in front of you before you know it. That's really sad. So what happened, you know, after that? Of course, you know, he was arrested and everything, and of course, your relationship with him, obviously, you know, being in the beginning wasn't there anyway, but it still had to, you know, have a serious cause and effect on you, you know, the way you thought about him now.
Yeah, I mean, I, of course, went through the typical hatred. Like, I hated him. I, you know, the things I thought about him were awful. I had to work on that forgiveness piece a lot. Again, not for him, but for me. You know, I never saw him again. I still, to this day, I don't think I've seen him since before the disclosure. Instantly I became the outcast of the entire family. And that was very difficult. You know, all my in-laws, it just, from that point on, you know, it was just not good. And then you live in a small town and everyone knows everything, and, you know,
That's such a shame, Mary. You know, it really is. That, you know, I that happened to me too. But go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it wasn't necessarily the town didn't necessarily treat us badly like my in-laws did. The town just, for the most part, didn't know how to respond. You know, you hear people with cancer who are diagnosed with cancer say that people tend to withdraw from them because they don't know what to say. And I found it was very similar with that is, you know, the more the word spread, people were very kind, but they didn't know what to say. So they kind of just avoided you like, oh, I don't want to stay. There's that lady. Oh, let's just hurry up and walk away. And I know that even now that's something that my kids and I have dealt with is just kind of being left out of everything because we were that family.
That's exactly who we were too, Mary. I have to say that the entire community knew about my abuse, right? And being the fact that my parents tried to take on the archdiocese is who it was through. And back then, now we're talking 1976, okay, and 78 by the time all this went through. I mean, you just didn't do that here, especially, you know, because I'm in the New Orleans area, and Louisiana is such a huge, huge Catholic state, especially New Orleans, you know. And if you take on somebody that way, you are and will become that, you know, and that's the way it happened. That's exactly the way it happened. I lost all my friends, you know, so I know what it's like to be isolated like that. You know, it's, and I do, I tell people all the time, I don't necessarily, you know, blame them, you know, at all for the isolation that I received. In other words, I wound up going to about three different schools over this, okay, because, you know, just like you say, when I got there, I wasn't, you know, liked anymore because everybody knew what happened, you know, word spread, you know. So, you know, I had to live with this for a very long time. So I know exactly what that's like, but I don't blame them as being children because nobody understood, did they, just like with you.
Right,
you know, the whole fact of everything. It's like a culture shock, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, especially
so,
in a small town.
I can see it. You know, and basically, I'll tell you, you know, where I live at. Even though I'm on the outskirts of a big city, this little small town, everybody knows everybody, just like you. You know, and so I can definitely relate. You know, so what were the boys' life like due to that fact growing up?
You know, my boys are blessed with a few very good friends, but definitely not like what you see most kids have.
Right.
You know, there wasn't a whole lot of invitations to go do things. It definitely, and then at school too, there was a lot of challenges. Well-meaning people, but again, you know, just uneducated in how to handle this. And it's definitely been a challenge. You know, my second son, he was kind of just so tired of the whole high school life. I mean, because my kids had to grow up so fast. And they are so much more mature than so many kids their age. So, like, my second son, when he got to his junior year of college, he's like, you know what, I'm tired of this. I'm going to homeschool. He finished his half of his junior year and all of his senior year in 3 months so he could graduate early and be done with high school. He's like, I'm tired of the drama. I'm tired of the, you know, the petty high school stuff. And he's like, it's just not for me. I want to get out and I want to work and I want to start moving towards my future.
Wow.
So it they definitely, you know, the thing that breaks my heart is my kids a lot of times say that they didn't get a childhood. And
I
agree. I mean, not only because of what we went through with that situation, just but also because of the marriage that I was in. It just, it was not a happy time for them. And I hate that. You know, if I could redo that, I would do it in a heartbeat, you know.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. And I lived that life myself, you know. And I tell you, you know, after I became a certain age, you know, I couldn't imagine what my parents actually went through, looking back at the things I did, you know, because I was abused, you know. And I did put them through some hard times myself, you know, looking back at it. Although I didn't really know that I was doing it in a way, you know, I was just living life, but I changed my lifestyle. You know, I started doing a lot of things that I shouldn't have been doing because I was isolated. You know, I got shut out from those friends I wanted to be with, you know, so I can definitely relate, you know, with that. But I tell you, I can't say enough about those two boys, about how courageous they are to come forward and you know, tell us stories like that and actually set the stage, you know, for you to where you are and what you've accomplished. I mean, that is something else. I mean, that's a story in itself right there. I mean, have you ever considered writing books or anything?
Yeah. Yeah, I really do want to. I mean, one of the things I love to do is I love going out and telling their story because they really are incredible. I mean, and one of the beautiful things that came out of all this is I think each of them several times have been approached by teens, especially teen girls, who told them, I went through this and, you know, there was one girl who was in my oldest son's class and she went through something and my son, you know, sent her a Facebook message one day and said, "Hey, I know what you're going through. I'm here for you."
Wow.
You know, those, their willingness to, you know, just, they're always looking out for the underdog. They're always looking for a way to make a difference. And
so
I just,
what does it mean
I love
them
going
whenever they know that they have touched a life like that, you have to see that in them. You know, I mean, you do this and you experience this a lot. And so do I. So what is it like for you to see that in them? That must be something else, huh?
It is. I know that they're both extremely humble. So anytime I am just like, "Oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you guys," or like, "Look, this is the outcome of this. And, you know, you guys are doing this," you know, they're just like, you know, they're just so humble and they just don't really like, they just don't even know what to say, you know? So, but I can tell that it's been a big part of why they've healed so well. Is because they know that we have found a way to bring purpose to their pain.
Oh, that's just wonderful to hear. You know, and I hope that you know, they can always stay on that road, because that's the road they should be on. And, you know, and you have to give yourself credit for putting them on that road and staying there too. I know sometimes there's some bumps in the road. We all know that. You know, but they're 20 and 17, and man, they just become men. And I think that where they are, you know, what they're doing is the best thing in life that they could ever be doing, considering what happened, you know. I mean, in my opinion, I think you're doing a wonderful, wonderful job at that. I really am, you know. So give yourself a big, you know, pat on the back for that. That's for sure. I know your life hadn't been easy at all.
Yeah, well, thank you.
So, you know, what are their goals in their life, you know, going from here, you know, considering what happened to them and everything? And have you noticed a different trend in their lives about the way they've handled, you know, coming out of this and grown into almost men and everything and moving on? I mean, so what's going on with that?
Well, they definitely have shown that they're extremely resilient. So my oldest son, he has, since the age of 14, wanted to be in the military. He enlisted in the Marines, as a junior and into the delayed entry program. And then the summer after he graduated, he went to basic training in California. While at basic training, I saw, you know, just through letters, I saw tremendous growth. I was so excited for him. Like, he was finally accomplishing what he's always wanted to do. And days shy of graduation, he got a hairline fracture in his femur. Oh, yeah. So he sat in medical recovery platoon for about 6 weeks, which is basically sitting for 23 hours a day. And that is not the way that you heal a hairline fracture or stress fracture. So he got a medical discharge, came home, you know, completely broken. And literally the minute he drove back home, his girlfriend broke up with him. So just ripped the Band-Aid off of, you know, welcome home. And that was tough. That was tough for him. You know, that took something that he had literally wanted to do since he was, like I said, 12, 14 years old. And it was all of a sudden taken away. But my kids, they're fighters. They're not going to stay down. He is now just about halfway through advanced diesel technician in Wyoming program. He'll graduate in June. And he's still, you know, he's still kind of considering trying to get, like, in the Guard or something. Because he just, he has a servant's warrior's heart. He really does. And, so we'll kind of see what happens there. He's dating an amazing woman. They've been together for actually a year on Valentine's Day. You know, so he just time and time again shows that resilience. My second son, he thought about the Marines as well, had actually signed up in the same program. In August, he was in a very bad accident at work and ended up breaking his leg and foot in about five different places. I tell my kids, I have four boys now, and now I tell the other two, okay, no one is allowed to go into the military because every time when you do, you break a leg.
That's
of
like,
course,
you know,
they're like, yeah, right, Mom, we're going to be anyway. Yeah, so so he's looking at quite a few different career options. He has, again, that servant's heart. He loves, he has his greatest personality. He's just, he lights up a room. And so he's really trying to figure out, you know, what's his next step? I mean, he's not even 18 yet. So I'm like, it's okay, son, you're working. Right. You love what you're doing right now. There's no rush, you know. And so it's going to be interesting to see what he does in his life.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You know, I mean, you know, all you can do is be there for them every single day, whatever it takes, you know, to maintain a positive road, you know, and that's what life has to be considering what we went through, you know, and you know, there's going to be challenges in the future. There could be certain triggers that come up for them, you know, along the way. And we all know that things happen and things are talked about and, you know, you never know. But, you know, the education that you have put in, you know, to yourself and learned, you know, so much over the years are going to benefit, you know, you and your family. They already have, you know, so that's something that you really have to be proud of, you know. So, you know, getting back, you know, I want to ask you about maybe this book thing we were on a little while ago. So do you think about a name yet? You got to put out a book for this. This is impressive.
I'm kind of stuck on a name. I mean, I have a name for the book of my life because my life is insane. And I mean, people hear it and they're just like, I cannot believe you're so okay. I have a name for that. If I write something for Boys' story, I mean, we've been published in one book. Our story has been kind of in a compilation of survivor stories, but I don't know that I'm actually going to tell their story in a book format, but because I want that to be their own pathway, if that's what they decide to do. But I do want to write something on here is a guide on how to help your children navigate this. I feel like that is there's a huge need for that, because there's not a lot of information specifically on that day-to-day, what your life is probably going to be like trying to help your child navigate healing. And granted, when I write my book about my life, it's going to have a lot of their story in it, because their story has become my story, and that's been my focus for, 12 years now. But I don't know that I'm actually going to tell their story word for word.
Right.
I'm going to leave that for them. But
sure.
But yeah, yeah. It definitely needs to happen. It's just, yeah, I agree.
Look, with myself too, I'm so busy all the time. It seems like that I need to find time to do that one day, but I just can't seem to find it, because of the my daily activities, are just crazy. My life is crazy. I have several dogs, and I know we talked about that earlier. So in your pastime, y'all like to go backpacking and everything? And hiking and things of that nature, and being outdoors, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. That's my happy place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I kind of started writing down parts of my story through my job at the prison. I know that it's progressing quicker than it was, a couple of years ago. But whatever I end up doing, it's going to be just letting people know that no matter what you've been through, you can still have an incredible life, and your past does not need to define you.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's, too. I mean, I know about your job also. Tell me a little bit about that. I mean, how, and you don't have to, please don't say any names or anything like that, but you have to see that in that institution, regarding where, with that, don't you see a lot of that there?
It's just mind blowing how much. I'm the reentry coach at our state women's prison. And part of my job is taking women through a curriculum called Moving On. And basically I teach them skills in communication, healthy relationships, emotions, and then just kind of making connections within the community and preparing for reentering society. Because I have such a strong background in trauma, I get to walk right with these women individually and as a group as they heal from so much of their trauma. I've put about 100 women through this program in the 2 years that I've been there. And out of those 100 women, I've probably only had 6 that did not disclose major childhood trauma.
I hear this all the time, and I see it all the time also, and it really is a tragic story, isn't it? It doesn't faze me anymore on the numbers of almost every situation, whether it be incarceration or whether it be behavioral, things of that nature. I talked to one not long ago, and she's a nurse in a behavioral center, okay? And I asked her, I said, out of all these, people that you see on a daily basis, what kind of numbers do you think? She says, right at 100%, John, And it's just mind-blowing that so many people have gone through this and that they didn't get justice, So, with Me Too, my goals, are also to help different states, get the statute of limitations abolished, more than anything. I know that there are half from what I'm up to now that have abolished it, but there were another 18, so to speak, that were adding amendments to them, adding ages, so to speak, with like 3-year windows and things of that nature going on. So, I mean, how do you feel about that?
I absolutely agree that statute of limitations need to be taken off. I don't know how many times over the last 12 years I have had grown adults, and I'm talking about anywhere from 50 to 80 years old, call me or come up to me when I'm doing a presentation or something and say, hey, this happened to me. I've never told anyone before. And it just, I hate the fact that there is literally in so many states, there's no way that that person can get justice. And
yeah,
I mean, it's just, it's so, I mean, attorneys and judges, and this is something that we've really been working on in South Dakota, they don't understand that the effects of abuse continues long after the abuse
mm-hmm.
stops. That's one
exactly.
big, you know, misconception. The other thing they don't understand is that so many people do not come forward for a very long time. And I know
exactly.
that there's starting to be more chatter about it, but it absolutely has to be understood that it is so terrifying for a survivor to come forward and talk about that, especially because it may be a loved one or a friend or whatever the case, or it's just embarrassing. It's just flat out embarrassing.
Yeah.
And those
yeah.
are the two biggest reasons that we have got to abolish that.
Oh, exactly. You know, and earlier, you remember how you brought up the number 52?
Yeah.
Guess what the average national age is? Yes, it is.
That's crazy.
Can you believe it? Can you believe it? It really, really is.
I'm not surprised.
And I'm on to that. It sure is. And you brought that up earlier. I was going to eventually get to this, but I had to let you know that the national average is 52, okay? So there's another one for you right there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How crazy is that? You know, but, yeah, you know, that's the thing, too, about long-term, you know, trauma associated, you know, with CSA is that, you know, now we're dealing with a lot of things that happen later on. And the reason for the age, you know, people coming out, like you said, you know, that there's so many of them. But, you know, just the sheer embarrassment, I think, especially for men, you know, more
mm-hmm.
than women, I think it seems to be. But the long-term effects of this, I mean, you're talking about PTSD and things, you know, of that nature.
Yeah.
You know, so in CPTSD and, you know, other things. So what, are you concerned about that with the boys?
I am.
I mean, I'm sure
because,
you have to be.
Yeah.
But, what's your thoughts about that?
You know, I know how CPTSD
mm-hmm.
has affected me. And I'm very open with the boys about my own healing process and my own journey and things like that. And so, like, I know my oldest son, he still has a counselor that he calls, that he does FaceTime with when he needs to.
Okay.
You know, my second son, he is not currently pursuing counseling right now, but it's, you know, we're constantly talking about things. You know, sometimes we'll go through different steps that I use with my clients to work on different things. But I know that between now and the time that they're 60, 70, 80 years old, there's a lot of life left to live, whether
mm-hmm.
it comes into play as they're, you know, as they get married or as they begin having children or they get out into the real world in the workforce, there is going to be times that they are triggered. And I am worried and I give them opportunities to, you know, be aware of what resources are out there. But also at this age, I know ultimately they have to make that decision to keep moving forward. I just keep creating the environment for
mm-hmm.
them to know that there's opportunities to continue to work towards healing and that there will be times that it'll pop back up again.
Mm-hmm. And also, too, you know, that there are a lot of other physical, you know, damage that comes with trauma, you know, to long-term
mm-hmm.
permanent nerve damage, you know, spinal issues, things of that nature, you know, that I live with. And I know a lot of people that are survivors that suffer tremendous amounts of damage, you know, in their bodies, you know. So,
absolutely.
And you know, what I want to emphasize, though, is that, you know, and I don't know how you feel about this, but when you are damaged by CSA and affected by it, that in a sense, due to the long-term effects of what's happening to people, I mean, don't you believe that it's a level of brain damage?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mentioned earlier that I'm an adverse childhood experiences master trainer, and are you familiar with ACEs?
No.
So ACEs was a study done by two doctors back in the 90s, and they began to research the correlation between childhood trauma and, you know, maladies later in life, whether it was emotional, physical, behavioral issues into adulthood. And so they came up with this absolutely incredible study where they did a huge case plan with over 17,000 people, and they realized this is a real thing. Childhood trauma affects people long into adulthood. Well, since then, they have came up with this amazing training that I think South Dakota was like the 13th state to actually adapt this training. And now we go into communities and we literally explain how trauma impacts all the different parts of the brain. And we explain, you know, this is what the hippocampus does. This is what the, you know, the cerebellar does. You know, this is all the ways that trauma impacts these parts of the brain. And that's why this happens. And that's why this happens. Like, it's absolutely incredible. Like, I highly recommend mm-hmm. anyone listening to try to find an ACEs trainer, because trauma impacts even trauma that happens in infancy.
So you say ACEs trained, that's A-C-E-S?
Yep, A-C-E. It stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to look that
amazing.
Up.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Usually the trainings are free. When we are trained as trainers, we are told you are doing these trainings for free. And it's absolutely groundbreaking, the information given mm-hmm. and then also the change that can begin to happen in communities or businesses or organizations, because people begin to realize we need to make a difference and we need to step in and help people heal and help people prevent.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, and that's the thing we're talking about. You know, we talked about the average age of men, you know, well, overall 52 years old. Okay. I mean, mm-hmm. look at that. You can't tell me that I'm really, really concerned about the 40-year-olds and the 30-year-olds and the 20-year-olds, you know. And what about the 60-year-olds? I know that they're out there mm-hmm. because I actually have several that I talk to, and I know what it's like, you know. So, you know, getting back on this abolishment, you know, type deal, I just don't understand how they can even argue, you know, the fact that there should be some kind of restriction, you know. It really does mind-boggle. But here's the thing, and we know this, is that there are people fighting that, which makes me sick mm-hmm. to my stomach. People like the archdiocese and insurance companies that, you know, don't want to be involved with, you know, coughing up billions of dollars if they can mediate, you know, instead of getting sued. So there's a lot there that really, really gets deep with all of this, you know. It's a shame due to laws being, in my opinion, really messed up until they should just totally abolish it, you know. And,
yeah,
and you know,
absolutely.
Your sons are a perfect example of someone. What if they did not tell you? Have you ever thought about that?
Absolutely, because there were three other little boys who we found out later had actually been molested before my boys. So, and I'm definitely not downplaying the level of abuse that they experienced, but it was definitely with the uncle, it was a progression
right.
thing. So the first three boys, it was like a smaller scale of abuse. And again, I'm not downplaying what they went through. And it progressed as it went through each of the five boys, ending with the worst mm-hmm. of the abuse with my second son. So there uh-huh. were already three little boys who had went through it and never said a word.
Did he admit to all of that?
Well, we had to take a plea bargain, And so he didn't admit to the others, and the others weren't counted on the case because my boys were the ones that came forward. And I don't even remember all the little nuances in that whole case deal, but he did admit to, he didn't admit to raping my son. He just admitted to the molestation as part of the plea bargain.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think at some point he admitted that he had done it, but it wasn't like on record as part of the case.
Mm-hmm. You see, that's just another example about, you know, how complicated these cases are when it comes down to plea bargains and, you know, and really messing with lives like this. It really is disturbing, you know, and to know that and to know that it was only five, that's a miracle within itself. You know, usually it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at the average perpetrator having, you know, upwards of 100, 130, and very few are ever discovered.
Yep, exactly. You know, like that's in the same situation as a case that we have down here in the New Orleans area, is that there were as many as, I believe, almost 30, you know, that came forward. That's at this time, though. And who knows who they paid off earlier, you know, and who knows how many may never come out, you know. And that's mm-hmm. just one guy. You know, then you got to think about how many of these priests out here and how many of these Boy Scout leaders out here damaged that many kids, you know, in their lifespan. You know, it's really,
absolutely,
really sickening to even think about the fact that they would touch children, you know, in this manner. And that's why we got to make a change, you know, Mary Beth. I mean, you're going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to pursue it the rest of my life. There's no question about it. It's in my blood. I have to. Because if I don't do it, then nobody else is going to do it. And, you know, in my opinion, because not when I'm saying you're there, I'm here, you know, I'm doing what I can where I'm at. And you're doing where you can where you're at, you know. And this is what we need to tell the public is that it's okay to get involved, you know. And especially for these other, these survivors out here that to know that you're not alone at all, you know, and that we are here for you. And that's the platform that NASCA provides also. You know, for what you're doing tonight, Mary Beth. I mean, this is such a great show, so much good information, and a wonderful story, you know. I hate the fact that I have to say wonderful story, but you know what? It's very educational. People need to hear this, and they need to realize the way it went down and what's going on, you know. And in order for them, you know, not to, there's a reason that they listen. And that's the reason why they listen is to find that common ground that we were talking about earlier, you know, is that you can find that, through me. You know, everybody knows my number. It's there on the website. You can always call me, among other people. And I'm always willing to talk, you know, and which I do. I have great friends now in this world, not just in the United States. You know, in fact, we are worldwide now. You know, there's people listening from Africa all the way to Canada to UK, you name it, you know, and we're all over. So I want everybody to know out there that, you know, tonight's very special guest was Mary Beth Halsworth from Gettysburg, South Dakota, and her sons were abused at a young age. And we went through the whole situation, but the difference in Mary's, you know, situation is that, you know, she took this on and she became educated, and she was there for her sons and still is till today and will be forever to help guide them through, you know, CSA. And that's probably one of the most beautiful stories I think I've ever heard. And I can tell that your dedication is there, you know, and we really do appreciate, what you've done. And I'm sure that everybody listening does also, too.
Well, thank you.
So
it's definitely been a pleasure to be on here and you know, visit with you and hear what you're doing, too. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. I sent you a friend request, by the way, and that way we can keep up, you know, with our dogs and stuff and let you know what I'm up to and this and that. And I'll send you something one day and say, hey, look, I'm going in because I got a case on this. And, you know, you can never have enough true, authentic friends in this business, believe me, you know. And I know that Mary Beth, for what you're doing, you're definitely what I would call a friend to me. Because we are so much alike. It just blows my mind. It's like looking at my own story in a way, you know, just a little bit different, but not much, I'm telling you, you know. So listen, you know, we have a little bit over about 4 minutes left. You know, I want you to just, you know, tell us, you know, what's your main goal here in life to tell the public and people out here and let them know, you know, exactly how you feel about the whole situation.
Gosh, I guess, again, it would just be that whatever you've been through in your life, it does not have to define you. You know, I just encourage you to keep reaching out to someone, even if it's me, you know, or you, John, mm-hmm. you know, reach out and just have someone there to listen to. And you believe in yourself. Know that whatever happened to you was not your fault. There's nothing you did wrong. And that you can still have this incredible life and you can use this story and whatever your story is to build you up and take you to the next level. You know, everything that you do to help yourself heal and every day that you step out with courage, even if it's just a little bit of courage, is part of you saying that that person who hurt you doesn't have power over you anymore. And you are completely 100% capable of that. And I mean, I believe in you and I don't even know you yet, but I know the power of the human spirit. And I know that you possess that. And no matter what you went through, you can overcome everything. And I'm living proof of that. My kids are living proof of that. John's living proof of that. Like there's just,
yeah,
you know, reach out, find us because we're here for you.
Yeah. That's exactly it. You have to reach out and, you know, and take that one step and your life could be changed forever. And I know it's very hard and there's no question about it, you know, but you have to know that there are people out here for you. And I'm one of those people. If you're listening out there, you can always call me. I always offer that every you know, on every one of my shows. I never not want to be here for somebody. Because if it comes down to it, and I know that I could change a life, that's what I want to do, you know. And I know that you're doing the same thing, Mary Beth, and that's what's so beautiful about you and your kids, too. I know that they're going to get that trait from you, you know, and that's something, you know, pretty special right there. You know, so
absolutely.
Listen, it's
well,
been a
you.
Great, great show. Is there anything else that you want to say? Is there any information that you wanted to give out? Anything at all?
I mean, just feel free to find me on Facebook. You can definitely look up the Center for Prevention and Child Maltreatment to learn more about Jolene's Law. If you're interested in getting something going in your area, you know, check that out. You can always email me, endeavor52@hotmail.com. Like, I'm just here to support you in any way I can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's great. That's awesome. I think it's been a wonderful show, Mary. It really has. I can go ahead and end the show now. Is there anything else you want to say at all? Is that good?
Nope, that's great. Thank you.
It's been a good show. I really did enjoy talking to you, by the way. And let's stay in touch, okay? I know so
absolutely.
Many of these people that I talk to on the show, yeah, they'll stop and say hi, you know, maybe 6 months from now, But you know, with what you have gone here, I really would like to keep up with your progress. And if I have something going, I'll send it your way, okay?
Yeah, likewise. I want to keep up with yours.
Okay. Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Mary. That was Mary Beth Hollisworth from Gettysburg, South Dakota. And she's been our guest tonight. It's been a wonderful show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to tonight's show. And once again, and I'll say this from another friend who says it, if you see something, please say something. Thanks for joining our show tonight. This has been Scan number 2851. Good night, everybody. Good night, Mary. Thank you so much.
Good night, John.